We walk and we are silent. Between us there are 23 years. 23 cannot be divided. 23 can be divided only by itself and by one. There is so much solitude between us. It cannot be dismantled into parts. It must be born as one. We are carrying lunch. We walk across the turned-up earth. We call it sod ground, Ogman's sod ground. When we go into the forest to gather wood, we pass this way. Sometimes we go in the direction of the Somoga family fields, so we can walk along Carbolo Road. Because it isn't so muddy, we call that puddle slick. Other times we go across the Count's forest, up to Palo Street. My mother has a kerchief tied around her head. We call that kerchy. Women must have a kerchief tied over their hair. The old ladies tie them in a knot below their chins. Their kerchiefs must be black. My mother's kerchief is coloured. She knots it in back, beneath her hair, which is done up in a bun. In the summers, she wears light triangular kerchiefs, a white kerchief with blue polka dots. My father got it for her last year, from the market in Kölce. My mother has chestnut brown hair, auburn chestnut hair. Not every chestnut has this tint of auburn. In the autumn, we collect chestnuts with my older sister. There is one single chestnut tree in the village. It is where the Barkozi Manor used to be. All the rest of the chestnut trees were cut down after the war. The earth, always so moist, tolerates only poplars and willow trees. We call them willowwood trees. In the spring, it's easy to make a whistle, a willowwood tree whistle. We whistle in order to annoy our mother, and the dogs, and the neighbours too. In the autumn, we escape to the only chestnut tree on the other side of the Kepets meadow. We sneak away behind the gardens. The enormous tree's five pointed leaves dry out toward the end of summer and begin to fall. It's as if there are huge cut-off hands lying around amid the dead leaves. In the spring, the blossoms of the chestnut tree are white candles. Its green burr is like a hedgehog. We make legs for the chestnuts out of matchsticks. We ask my mother for the burned-out matchsticks. Only our mother can touch matches. They're not for kids.
"Scissors, knives, forks, not for little brats," chants my mother. "Because we are the masters now. Today the people are the lords. Before, the kulaks exploited us. Now it's we who exploit the kulaks. If they don't like it, too bad, and that's that."
This is what the people who used to be landless farmers say.
"It's easy for them, because they never brought even so much as an iron nail into the collective," says my grandfather, who misses his horses most of all. "They only take things from it." "Because they like handouts," he murmurs in disgust. "They only know how to squander," he says. "They just dissipate everything. They don't know how to improve anything. It all just goes to waste."
The former landowners miss their horses the most. The land, not so much. It was the horses, not them, who were tortured on the collective farms. The soul was driven out of them.
"They broke those horses. They died before their time. What's the point of that?"
my grandfather says. The new masters were impatient and violent. They addressed everyone as comrade. They made up new greetings.
"Even their fathers were nobodies. All they want are handouts," he grumbles. "Forward," say the comrades, instead of "God bless," and they're always talking about progress. "We must progress with the age, comrades. Progress. We will produce whatever we want. If it's rubber dandelions we want, then we'll make rubber dandelions. If it's rice porridge we want, then we'll make rice porridge. Whatever the party wants is what will be. What Comrade Stalin and Comrade Rakoshi say is holy writ. We must, comrades, be victorious over nature."
The brigade leaders repeated the slogans to the shivering people during early morning training sessions. In the meantime, they gulped down a shot or two of brandy.